Live from the ESPN Pensacola studios. It's the Glass Half Full with Jordan Glass. You could be a part of today's show by texting or calling at 850-623-1330. Now, here's Jordan Glass.
They are going. And then Goff falls down, but Montgomery is able to pick up the first down. So Goff falls down as he's making the handoff, and this should seal it. They'll run the clock down, kick the field goal. What a call! Just getting it in position where Bates wanted it. Ball game. And what a game. 34-31, Lions.
I mean, you couldn't have asked for a better game drawn up on a Thursday night than what we had last night between the Packers and the Lions. Man, that last three-play sequence right there with the fourth down play where Jared Goff gets his feet tangled up with the center and he's falling down, but he's still able to get the ball to David Montgomery. David Montgomery converts the fourth down for a first down. They're able to run out the clock, center it right in the middle of the field, or right where it needs to be, and they just boot it through and get the 34-31 win. I think right now, you look at this, obviously, lots to unpack from this game, but I think definitely for sure, you're definitely seeing why the Detroit Lions are the number one seed overall, because let me tell you something. They started out that game, they punched the Packers in the mouth. It was 17-7 at halftime, right? And then the Packers come out and they respond and they battle back and they make it a ball game. The Packers could have collapsed and gotten blown out after halftime, but they didn't because they're a good football team. And they came out and they put on a heck of a performance in the second half and almost came back and won that game, but just unfortunately fell short. But man, just a great game. And honestly, it started before the game when there was some jawing happening back and forth between Detroit Lion fans who were on the field to hold the flag for the national anthem and Green Bay's players. And then Matt LaFleur steps in. Something said to Matt LaFleur. He kind of starts having a verbal exchange to the fans. And we actually have an exclusive here at ESPN Pensacola. We have the audio of what the fans said to LaFleur before the game. So let's go ahead and roll that clip.
You're going down, LaFleur. You're going down like a sweet muffin.
No, obviously that's from Dodgeball. I couldn't help but to make a LaFleur comparison, all right? But no, seriously, Matt LaFleur getting into it with a Packers fan last night. He talked about it after the game. A Lions fan, not a Packers fan. He talked about it after the game, said, look, they were kind of chirping at the Packer players, and he was trying to de-escalate the situation. He was trying to step in, make sure that his players didn't do anything stupid in that situation that would get them suspended or anything like that or fined. Because here's the thing about the Packers. The Packers are in a playoff race of their own, right? I mean, they're right there behind the Detroit Lions in the division, in that NFC North. And I would dare say they're probably, a four seed in the NFC playoffs? So, I mean, they still got a lot left to play for. Last thing you want is one of your players punching a fan of the Detroit Lions and getting suspended or something like that. So Matt LaFleur steps in there and tries to break it up, but ultimately ends up getting sucked into it himself. But hey, that's rivalry football for you. I loved seeing it. I thought it was great. It set the tone for this game, and it turned out to be a fantastic game. Jared Goff goes 32-41, 283 yards, 3 touchdowns, did have an interception, just because I don't think there's any quarterback that could go against this Packers secondary and not throw an interception. That is one of the, if not the best, secondaries in the NFL. Also, Gibbs and Montgomery, we talked about it on yesterday's show. They would have to be limited. The Packers would have to shut them down if they wanted a chance at really winning this game. They did that kind of, but Gibbs and Montgomery still were able to get their own plays. 94 yards combined between the two of them. So they had 94 of the 111 rushing yards that Detroit had came from their two-star running backs. Like I said, it was 17-7 at the half. You look back and you watch this game. I mean, this is going to be one of the classics of the season, right? This is going to be in 5 years when, you know, you're at home on Thanksgiving break or something like that, and you got some time off, and you just happen to turn on the NFL Network, and they're showing a classic game, there's a very good chance it's going to be this game. It was a great game. The Packers showed a lot of heart, showed a lot of fight there in that second half. But, you know, I think one of the things that really helped the Lions, and it's really been a factor for the Lions and why they are to the point that they're at, is the aggressive nature of Dan Campbell. Look, had Dan Campbell punted the ball away or kicked field goals or whatever last night, there's a good chance the Packers probably could have won that game in the second half. But Dan Campbell, with the certain type of fortitude, if you know what I mean, to go for it as many times as he did, and just this typical Dan Campbell aggressive mentality and nature. And I'm gonna tell you right now, when it comes to Dan Campbell, the Miami Dolphins screwed up when it comes to Dan Campbell, because they had an opportunity years ago to make Dan Campbell their head coach. Could you imagine what the Miami Dolphins would be right now? Looking at what Dan Campbell has done with the Detroit Lions, could you imagine what the Miami Dolphins would be right now if Dan Campbell had been hired as the head coach? Instead, he goes on, he gets the job with the Lions, and he's done a phenomenal job with them. I like the aggressive nature. My only concern is whether or not it can be sustained, right? Because what happens when you hit a game, you know, I mean, we saw it with Les Miles when he was at LSU, the going for it on fourth down. It works as long as it works, right? You know what I mean? Like, if you are getting stopped, if you go for it on fourth down for six times and you get stopped three or four times, that could be what cost you the ball game, right? But guys like a Les Miles, like a Dan Campbell, like a Ron Rivera, who's, you know, Riverboat Ron. He's going to go out there and he's going to gamble it. Maybe not as aggressive as Les Miles and Dan Campbell, but he still kind of fits that category. They're still going to take that risk. They're still going to run that risk of, if we don't get it, it could be something that cost us this game. And I love the fact that last night, after the game was over, Dan Campbell was kind of asked about that. They were like, why did you go for it there on fourth down? You know, you could have had an opportunity to, you know, play for overtime or whatever it may be. And Dan Campbell clearly said, he said, if we win this, we have to win it on overtime or on offense. We're not going to win it with our defense out there. We have to win this game with our offense on the field. That's why I went for it on that fourth down right there with 40-something seconds left in the game. That's why I did that, to set us up for a better opportunity for a field goal. And it paid off. It paid off. But again, my worry is when they get into the postseason and they're playing a Philadelphia Eagles, they're playing a Minnesota Vikings, they're playing the Green Bay Packers again, does it work as well? Because it was almost disastrous last night. I mean, what happens if in the tangled up mess that Jared Goff got caught up in on that play, what happens if the ball slips out? Green Bay picks it up and runs it back for a touchdown. We're talking about a completely different ending to the game last night. So Dan Campbell's aggressiveness, while it's paid off, it is definitely something that at some point it is going to come back and bite him in the rear end. And that's only because we've seen it time and time and time again. Right? The kick six, I think it's a perfect example. The kick six in the game between Alabama and Auburn, the Iron Bowl a few years ago. Nick Saban trying to be aggressive, right? You know, getting them to take that second look, to review the play, to see that there is that 1 second, wanting to line up for that field goal. Nick Saban could have taken a knee and gone to overtime and probably won that Iron Bowl, and we wouldn't have had a kick six, right? Like, if Nick Saban just says, okay, there's a second left, go take a knee, let's go win this in overtime. And I think had that game gone to overtime, Alabama probably would have won that game. But Nick Saban trying to be aggressive, kicks it, it's short. Chris Davis returns it all the way back, and Auburn wins the game, and we have a not only historic moment in the Iron Bowl, but in college football in general, right? So that's where I say Dan Campbell, I love the fact that he's as aggressive as he is, but at some point it is going to bite him in the rear end. It's the Glass Half Full on ESPN Pensacola, 1330 AM, 99.1 FM. Talking about last night's Thursday night football game. On the other side of it, Jordan Love, 12 of 20, 206 yards and a touchdown. Not a bad night at the office for him. I think, again, the Packers, just a slow first half. Just really could not get anything going in the first half, and that's really what kind of led to their downfall. Because I think, look, if they have success in the first half like they had in the second half of that game last night, there's a better chance for them to win. And they had a really good chance to win last night. So I think you're going to be upset when you watch this film. You're going to be sick to your stomach when you go back and watch this film if you're anybody in that locker room for the Packers. But ultimately, at the end of the day, they played a hell of a ball game and came up short against the top team in the NFC. I mean, Detroit is now officially in the playoffs. They've just got to hold on to the top seat. Let's see if they can do that. Philadelphia Eagles definitely going to be trying to take it from them, though, over the course of the season. Hey, if you want to be a part of today's Glass Half Full, you can definitely do that. 850-623-1330. Again, it's 850-623-1330. You know, yesterday on the show, we talked about UCF because we're in that season now where teams that are going to be looking for new head coaches, the rumor mill is going to begin. And everybody's going to be, oh, I heard from this source. I heard from that source. My sources are telling me, and you got to take things with a grain of salt. But this one that came out about North Carolina, this one is one that you can kind of put a little weight into because all the big heavy hitters in the world of sports broadcasting, their sources are telling them this. And usually these sources are pretty accurate. Bill Belichick has had conversations with the University of North Carolina about their head coaching vacancy for their football team. What? I'm shocked. I'm shocked by this. Not because he's having conversations with a football team. It's not that. My thing is that it's a college football team. Right? Bill Belichick, known for the NFL, not college football. He's the reverse Saban. Saban, known for college football, not the NFL. Could you imagine being a recruit and Bill Belichick being in your living room trying to recruit you?
No, we think you're a really good player. And, we feel like you would be a good asset to the team. We'd like to extend a full offer to you if you'd be interested. If you're not interested, we're on to the next one.
Like, what kind of recruiting pitch is that? That's what you would get from Bill Belichick. I just don't see Bill Belichick doing the things that you would need to do to be a successful college football coach. Can he coach ball? Absolutely. There's no doubt in my mind he couldn't line a team up and actually produce a good product on the field. But he is not a guy that's going to go in there, shake hands, kiss babies. Look, to be a college football head coach, you essentially have to be a politician as well, right? You've got to go into these people's homes. You've got to go into their communities. You've got to give speeches. You've got to give them rah-rah messages. You've got to make them think that they are the greatest person in the entire world and the program would fall apart if they're not a part of it. Somehow, I get the feeling that Bill Belichick is more the type of coach that's going to come in and go, you either want to be here or you don't want to be here. I mean, we could care less. We got other guys we want to talk to. Like, that's my mentality for the way I think Bill Belichick would handle this. Just, you know, hey, you don't want to play for us? Fine. Go play somewhere where you do want to play. You want to sit on the bench for them 2 years when you could start right away for us? Fine, go for it. We've got other guys we can go talk to. I feel like that's how Bill Belichick would recruit because that's how he handled guys in the NFL. And don't get me wrong. His players loved him, right? The players loved him in New England, minus a couple. There might have been, you know, a couple that didn't like him, one named Tom Brady. But still, for the most part, I mean, you got video of Randy Moss inviting him to a Halloween party and Bill shows up dressed like a pirate. So I know Bill can have fun and cut loose. I just don't know if he can do what needs to be done to be a successful coach in college football. I figured Bill Belichick would go after a New York Jets job, a New York Giants job, Dallas Cowboys if that becomes open. Because honestly and truthfully, if you look at the demand for the coaches, there's a little bit more demand at the college level for a head coach than there is at the NFL level. And I know that's crazy to think about, and you go, well, that's the NFL. You would think there'd be more demand, and you would be right. But there's not, because at the NFL level, you don't have to recruit, right? You have people who handle scouting. You have people who handle signing players. You just coach ball at the professional level. And that's why I thought that Bill Belichick, if he took another coaching job somewhere, he would stay at the pro level. Plus, proven and given success at the pro level, why would you want to leave and go risk it? But let's say, for kicks and giggles here on the Glass Half Full, which, by the way, you can be a part of, 850-623-1330 right here on ESPN Pensacola. Let's say, and we're talking about Bill Belichick talking to North Carolina about their vacancy at the head coaching position for the football team. Let's just say he did accept that job, right? Let's say UNC was interested, and they reach out, and they offered him a deal, and he accepted it and became the next head coach at North Carolina. What if, and I'm just throwing this out there for, like I said, just for kicks and giggles, we're having fun here on a Football Friday on ESPN Pensacola. What if he brings Nick Saban out of retirement to be his defensive coordinator? So you have Bill Belichick and Nick Saban on the same coaching staff at North Carolina. Will it happen? Probably not. I will actually be genuinely shocked if Bill Belichick is hired as the head coach of North Carolina. Why? Because you just fired a guy who's 73. Do you know how old Belichick is? 72. Why? It makes no sense to have a guy who is 73 as your head coach. You let him walk, and then you bring in a guy who's just a year younger. I'm not saying you got to go hire a 35-year-old head coach if you're North Carolina, but, I mean, at least go get somebody in their mid to late 50s with some experience at the college level that knows how to recruit. I just don't feel like Bill Belichick is a good guy at the college level to recruit. He's very much a very business-like mentality. And when you're dealing with 18, 19-year-old kids, and honestly, while you're recruiting them, while you're dealing with 16, 17-year-old kids, and they're getting all this NIL money thrown at them and all that stuff, I don't see Bill being the guy that can go into somebody's living room and talk their mama into letting them, their son come play for him for the next 3-4 years. Is he a good football coach? Absolutely. No dispute here. Could he recruit? That's where my problem is. We'll have to see how that plays out, though. That is crazy to think that that conversation has already happened between Belichick and North Carolina. It's the Glass Half Full, ESPN Pensacola, 1330 AM, 99.1 FM. Real quick before we head to break, looks like Bevo not going to be allowed at the SEC Championship game tomorrow. That's right, the beloved live mascot for the Texas Longhorns. They basically were told, nah, you can't bring him in. We don't want him inside the stadium. They said there's no room. That was what the reason they gave. I think this is, we're going to give this reason because we don't want to give the real reason, one of those things, right? Like when a girl breaks up with you and she says, it's not you, it's me. That's not the real reason she's breaking up with you. But that's the reason she's going to give you, right? I just need some space. I just need this. I just need that. That's not the real reason. That's just the reason she's giving you. And that's what's happening here. There's no room. We don't have any room. We can't put him in there. Have you seen Mercedes Stadium in Atlanta? That is a big stadium. There's room for one Texas Longhorn steer in there. Trust me, there's room somewhere. Put him on the concourse next to the Chick-fil-A. I mean, just come on. There's room inside that stadium somewhere. Put him outside. Right? Set up an enclosure outside. That way he can still be there. Honestly and truthfully, they just didn't want him there. I guarantee you, they didn't want the SEC and the people at Mercedes-Benz Stadium in Atlanta didn't want to have to deal with PETA. They didn't want to have to deal with PETA. They didn't want to have to clean up Bevo. And then also the fact that it's Texas and Georgia again. They didn't want a repeat of the Sugar Bowl a few years ago. You remember that? You remember that? They bring Uga over to check out Bevo. Bevo goes insane and tries to murder Uga. I think that was the most life Texas showed in that game, honestly. So I think that's really what it was. It's not that they don't have room for Bevo. They just don't want him there, which is sad because that's part of the tradition of college football. But regardless, we'll take our first time out of the show. When we come back, more of the Glass Half Full right after this.
The Rich Eisen Show on weekdays after Greeny at 11 to 2 on ESPN Pensacola, 1330 AM, 99.1 FM.
It's the Glass Half Full with Jordan Glass. Be a part of today's show at 850-623-1330. Now, here's Jordan Glass.
ESPN Pensacola, 1330 AM, 99.1 FM. Welcome back in to the Glass Half Full on this Football Friday, 9:24. If you want to be a part of today's show, 850-623-1330, 850-623-1330. Got Austin Price joining us in studio now, and obviously Roll Tide Radio coming up after us at the top of the hour, the last Roll Tide Radio of the year, I believe, correct?
I believe so, yeah.
Yep, so that's definitely want to tune in for that. I want to get your opinion on something because obviously bumping back in with some Christmas music there.
Uh-huh.
It's that time of year. It's a hard-hitting question. Is Die Hard a Christmas movie?
No. No, it's
what?
Not. It is,
yes!
Not. That is not a Christmas
movie. It revolves
movie.
Around a Christmas party. The hijackers take over the building in a Christmas party. He writes on the, now I have a machine gun, ho, ho, ho.
Okay, let me
There's
ask
There's Christmas
you this.
Music in the end credits.
Did it come out around Christmas time? I think it may have, did it?
Is that your stipulation? I don't actually know the release
date. That would add to the argument.
It would. Let's find out.
I think it may have come out around Christmas. So by those criteria, sure. By definition, it may be a Christmas movie. But I don't feel the holiday cheer when I watch it.
Oh, no. See, this is the first hit to the argument. It came out in July.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, Christmas in July. Okay. Yeah.
There we go.
Yeah, so it's a Christmas in July film. It's not a real Christmas film.
I still stand by it's a Christmas movie. Yeah, it's not Christmas until Hans falls off of Nagatomi Plaza. It's just not.
Why can't you be like an elf or a Christmas Story guy?
Oh, no, I'm definitely with those guys. I'm definitely with those,
you're
too.
Like, I'm just a Bruce Willis guy,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm just, you know. If Bruce Willis was Buddy the Elf, it'd be even better. And it'd be shotguns. And
it would definitely be an interesting film, sure.
Welcome to the party, pal.
Yeah.
Anyways, let's get to some sports now.
Please.
I'm sure people are like, all right, we didn't want to hear movie trivia from you guys. Conference USA Championship game coming up tonight. Western Kentucky, Jacksonville State, 2-8-4 teams. Jacksonville State, 7-1. I don't think anybody – I think people are going to watch this game just because it's on.
Yeah, and it's just because they love the sport.
Yeah, yeah. I'm going to lean towards Jacksonville State in this game. I think, you know, they've been the better team. They've been the more consistent team throughout the season. They're kind of riding a little bit. They're 5-1 their last four – or 4-1 in their last five.
Right.
So.
Well, and didn't they lose to Western Kentucky by like 2 points just a week ago?
I feel like they did. I feel like that was their one loss right. In that stretch. So
Jacksonville
yeah.
State, they're ready now. They're gonna beat up on them probably.
They've watched the film this time, hopefully.
Right.
Mountain West Championship. These are ones that people are going to be watching
yes.
because there's playoff. The Mountain West and the American Athletic Championship. There's playoff implications here with just about both of these games, especially this one. UNLV, Boise State. Boise State wins. Not only are they in, but they more than likely get that first round bye. Mm-hmm. If they lose. That brings up the question, does that open the door for a UNLV who would beat them for a conference champion? It also could open the door for Army, who's playing in the American Athletic Conference. Now, UNLV probably would get a better look than Army would.
They would.
But I still think it opens the door for both of them. And I don't know if I feel comfortable sitting here saying UNLV can beat Boise State. Not because UNLV is not a good team. It's just because of a guy named Ashton Jeanty.
Right. Boise State won their first matchup by 5 points, I believe. So this could be another one where a rematch could be a bit tricky for the Broncos. But UNLV, if they do win, is definitely the favorite to make the Group of Five playoff spot because they're already higher ranked than Army by several spots. Not only that, but they would have undone one of their losses.
Right.
Their other losses in overtime to Syracuse, who's now ranked. So UNLV has proven, hey, we can compete with bigger competition. Army's biggest opponent was Notre Dame. They got ran off the field.
That is true.
Army's a cute story, but UNLV is the group of five team that's looking like, hey, we're actually competent.
Yeah, everybody loves the whole Army story, especially when it was Army and Navy undefeated all through the season. They're like, could they actually do it? Could this be our G5 team that gets in? Because you want to see that Service Academy get into the college football playoff. But yeah, like you said, both Army and Navy, when they met Notre Dame, got boat raced in that game. I think one of the things to keep an eye out for in this game, and by the way, you're listening to The Glass Half Full right here on ESPN Pensacola, 1330 AM 99.1 FM. If you want to be a part of today's show, 850-623-1330. That is Austin Price. I'm Jordan Glass. Thank you so much for tuning in. I think one thing to keep an eye on in this game is that Genty, when Genty struggles, or at least it's not necessarily that he's struggling, but the opposing defense actually limits him to having big games. Doesn't happen a lot, but when it does, Boise State's offense tends to struggle. And one of those games earlier this year that Genty did struggle in was that UNLV game, I do believe. So it's going to be interesting to see how this UNLV defense matches up against Ashton Genty. I think that's definitely going to be something to watch in this game tonight.
Oh, it absolutely could. I think if anyone has proven they are capable of containing Genty and therefore the Broncos offense as a whole, yeah, it's absolutely the Rebels. So who knows? That may be the Rebel squad that makes it before Ole Miss does. We'll see.
Oh, take that, Ole Miss fans. 850-623-1330,
yeah,
Ole Miss
fans.
Let
us know how you feel about that.
Get on in here on that one. Let's see. Also, I think the thing with the American Athletic Championship, I'm looking at it. There's still some great storylines. Even though, yes, it could open the door for Army with a Boise State loss, they're still probably not going to get in. But they still could win their first conference championship.
Right.
In their first year of being a part of the ACC tonight, but they're going against Tulane, and Tulane's got a running back about like Genty at Boise State. You're talking about Mekhi Hughes, who's the 12th best rusher in the nation. This guy runs the ball, and that offense runs through him. It's kind of like what we've seen this year with Derrick Henry and the Ravens in Baltimore. It's kind of the same way Tulane was. I mean, last week during the Thanksgiving game, he was held to like 15 yards by Memphis's defense. They lose the game. So it's very, very touch and go with this Tulane offense. If Hughes has a big game, they're successful.
Well, and speaking of that loss to Memphis, that's Tulane's, I think, biggest problem right now. And I think it actually hurt these playoff chances that you're talking about with Army. If Tulane was a top 20 team, if
yeah.
Tulane had beat up on this now ranked Memphis and they were still as high up as they are, that would really help Army's playoff argument. But the fact that Tulane has lost, they lost bad, they are now not ranked, that hurts Army's chances. And the fact that Tulane, I think, is still favored by point spread says a lot.
Yeah, and look, again, like you were just saying, I think we would have a different conversation where we're sitting here talking about if Boise State loses, could UNLV get that spot in the college football playoff as that highest-rated G5 conference champion? If Tulane wins a week ago on Thanksgiving, then we're sitting here talking about a completely different situation where it's either Boise
yeah.
State gets in or Tulane gets in, depending on what happens in that Mountain West Championship game. So
right.
I think that game really, if you're a Tulane fan, you're going to be upset about that game.
You're aching. Yeah,
yeah, for sure. Let's see. We just kind of touching on this game one more time. Army, I don't know if they have the firepower to go up against Tulane. It's a great story. They've had a great year. And obviously,
yeah.
like I said, everybody wants to root for the service academies because it is – our United States military. Those are members of the military playing on those teams. We want to support them. We want to cheer them on. But I just don't know if they have the firepower to go up against Tulane.
No, I think Army has really benefited more from the kind of competition they've played. Tulane almost beat Kansas State. They played an Oklahoma team, which obviously has better talent on paper, even if they are struggling this year. So, yeah, Tulane's far more battle-tested, ironically, since we're talking about Army here. But I'll take the Green Wave to win.
And I'm noticing our sister station down there with Cat Country 98.7. Our buddy Eldon from Sonny's Barbecue is in there
really?
With some delicious treats. And I'm wondering when he's going to make his way up here to us.
He probably won't.
I'm staring. My face is in the window right now just trying to stare and see. And we'll see. We'll see.
Yeah, we'll figure that out.
We're hungry too. No, I want to get your opinion on something that we talked about in the first segment of today's show.
Okay.
Because you mentioned it a little bit when you came in. Mac Brown obviously gone at North Carolina. Now we hear Bill Belichick has had conversations with them.
Right.
I want you to just say on air, because you told me a little bit, so I know what you think of it, but I want you to say it on air, because I want to have a little conversation about this.
Well, it's not even what I think. It's just the truth.
Yeah.
They brought back Mac Brown, and he was significantly older. He was past his coaching prime. And now you're bringing in Bill Belichick, who is an old coach who's past his coaching prime.
Yeah, there's a year difference between the two of them.
Right, and you're now sitting here in a position where Belichick, you mentioned during break when we were talking about it, you said he doesn't have the college experience Mac Brown does.
Yeah.
Mac Brown at least had proven, hey, I can succeed in college and I can succeed at UNC. He came in with that. Belichick would not come in with that to his resume. Not only that, but what he accomplished in the NFL has since been greatly doubted ever since Tom Brady left New England. I think,
that's right, yeah.
I think you could make a big argument that Belichick is an overrated NFL coach, much Ooh. Less him coming to UNC and turning them around overnight with when he's going to have a walker in a couple years. I mean, it's mean, but like, what is this? Ooh. I mean, we are picking UNC head coaches like we're picking presidents here.
Yeah, yeah. You know what? Yeah, you're not wrong on that. But, I mean, also, let me just – and I'm going to do this. I wish we had the cameras going here in studio because I'm going to do this for you. This is Bill Belichick recruiting. I got to bring the hood on my hood.
Yeah,
up,
he's right? pulling the hood over
so
the mic here.
We got to get the hood up, and then it's just – and it's, well, do you want to come to UNC or not?
You'll win.
Yeah, we'll win.
Yeah.
If you don't want to come here, we got somebody else. We can go to them.
We can go 7-5 in the ACC.
On to the next recruit.
Kind of a big deal.
I mean,
if we have a generational quarterback, we'll maybe be ranked 23rd.
Compare that to Nick Saban doing the cha-cha slide in somebody's living room to help bring them into the University of Alabama.
Lord.
And I said it in the first segment. If you're a college football coach, you've also essentially got to be a politician.
Yeah.
Because you've got to go press the flesh. You got to kiss babies. You got to shake hands, take pictures. You got to be happy. You got to go into people's home. And
you have to convince them.
Yeah. And Bill Belichick is NPR radio. It's just – well, you know, this is what we're going to do. If you want to come here, you can come here.
Right. He'd be good for a board meeting.
The meeting would be bored for sure, yeah. All right, we'll take a timeout. When we come back, more Glass Half Full right after this.
Hey, if you own or manage a business in the greater Pensacola area, how would you like to get your business in front of men ages 25 to 54? Well, that's who listens to ESPN Pensacola.
Hey!
Okay, men ages 25 to 54 and Sarah.
Excuse me?
And Jill. Whether it be a radio ad with ESPN Pensacola or online through ADX Digital, we can come up with the best solutions for you. Get in front of men ages 25 to 54 and Sarah and Jill.
Woohoo! Yeah!
Just go to our website, ESPNPensacola.com, click on the sales opportunity.
Mike Greenberg, weekdays 9 to 11, right before the Rich Eisen Show on ESPN Pensacola, 1330 AM, 99.1 FM.
It's the Glass Half Full with Jordan Glass on ESPN Pensacola, 1330 AM, 99.1 FM. Be a part of today's show at 850-623-1330. Now, here's Jordan Glass.
It is a Football Friday here at ESPN Pensacola, 1330 AM, 99.1 FM. If you want to be a part of the show here on the Glass Half Full, 850-623-1330, 850-623-1330. That is Austin Price. I am Jordan Glass, and we've got some more conference championship games to talk about for this weekend. This time, we're going to be talking about the big boys playing on Saturday. We'll start the Big Ten championship game. Yes, Penn State's got a couple of really good running backs. It's going to be interesting to see the Oregon defense against the run, against those running backs. But is that really going to help them?
I've seen Oregon have a narrow spread,
yeah.
But I've still seen a lot of people online saying, yeah, I think Penn State's probably got this one. And it's like, why? Oregon doesn't necessarily look proven. They've got one statement win.
Right.
And it was at home by 1 point. But if they're not proven, Penn State certainly isn't. They lost at home to Ohio State, who's far and away the toughest team they faced all year. And Penn State has struggled more against some of their opponents week in, week out. So I don't understand. And people are going to bring up, well, Oregon struggled with Wisconsin. Okay, Penn State had a slow start against Wisconsin.
Right.
Penn State had to go to overtime with USC. I think USC is what? 6-6, 7-5 at best?
Something like right that, now. Yeah.
It's like Penn State has limped to the finish line just like everybody else has. So I think this is more Oregon speed. I don't know why Penn State is getting the hype that they're getting. It's going to be competitive, but I don't know why they're getting looks to win this game.
My big thing with this game, It doesn't matter who's the running back is for Penn State. It doesn't matter who the quarterback is for Penn State. It doesn't matter who they have at receiver, offensive line, defensive line, whatever. They still have James Franklin as their head coach. This is still a big game.
Yeah.
I don't trust him in big games.
His epitaph will read, he was all right.
Yeah, he is all right. Yeah, yeah. He was good at Vandy, and then after that it was kind of 50-50. But look, I think James Franklin is going to be the deciding factor in this. If he can get out of his own way and he actually calls a good game, Penn State has an opportunity. I think Penn State could win this game. But I'm leaning towards Oregon. I think Oregon's just the better team. But even though, like you said, their one statement win they have this year is against Ohio State by 1 point at home. And let's be honest, that's not really anything that Oregon did in that game, because it was Will Howard that just had the mental error.
Yeah.
The mental errors by Ohio State in that game, much like we saw last week against Michigan, cost them that opportunity in Oregon, in Eugene. And I think that Oregon really is kind of going to be one of those teams that, and we talked about this on Tomahawk Talk on Wednesday, they're flying under the radar as far as the college football playoff goes, because nobody's talking about them, right? We're all talking about how Alabama shouldn't be in, Miami's getting snubbed. We're talking about all this other stuff, the Texas-Georgia rematch. Nobody's saying anything about Oregon. Nobody's pointing out what you just said about Oregon, that their one quality win this year by one was really more so because Ohio State messed up in the game,
yeah,
more so than Oregon actually beating it.
It was an execution error, and right, that's what you're saying. When it comes to James Franklin's coaching, there's a lot of errors with execution.
Absolutely.
Can't afford to have that.
Absolutely. So I think Oregon does win this game. I think they stay the number one team. But I'm going to call this right now. I think Oregon gets exposed in their first game in the playoffs.
Really? You think they're one and done?
I think they're – it depends on who they line up with. It depends on who they line up against, obviously. But if they get a good quality team, yeah, it's a very real chance that that could happen.
Really? I don't know. I think Oregon's good. I just don't think they've had much of an opportunity to prove it. And I think this is going to be – this Oregon-Penn State game, if I had to give a comparison – I'd say it's probably going to be like Texas A&M. People were like, oh, A&M may have them here because Texas hasn't looked so impressive. Well, and then Texas just shuts them down, you know? So I think Oregon may do the same here. I think they win probably by 10 or 11 points.
Yeah, okay.
Good win. You may not necessarily look at them as a title favorite after it, but it's like, okay, they're clearly a competent team. They're reminding us that they are here.
Right.
Do with that what you will.
And then for Penn State, even if you lose this game, even if you get routed in this game, you're still getting into the playoffs.
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
This is one of those games where it's like, hey, whatever. Whatever happens, happens. We're both in. Let's just go out there and have fun. The Big 12 championship. Arizona State needs to win this game to get into the college football playoffs.
Yep.
And I think, honestly and truthfully, all you got to do in this game going up against Iowa State, I believe, all you got to do in this game, hey, just turn around and hand it off to Cam Scataboo.
Yeah, I don't want to minimize Iowa State to that because they have defied my expectations.
Okay.
They were like a 7-6 team last year, I think, and I thought they were going to lose to K-State last weekend. I thought they weren't going to be nearly as good as they have been, but they've stuck around, had a couple of down weeks there, but they've stuck around. They're in this hunt still. But Arizona State has just been a phenomenal story. So I want ASU to win. I think they're on a better tear right now. But this is anyone's game. People talk about the Big 12 like it sucks. And it doesn't have a contender, but it's a very deep conference. This, man, I think Arizona State's going to win by probably around 10 points. But if Iowa State wins, I wouldn't be surprised. They've already defied so many odds. So this is kind of a coin flip for me.
And, of course, you are listening to The Glass Half Full right here on ESPN Pensacola. If you want to be a part of today's show, text or call 850-623-1330. Talking about the Big 12 championship game, I just like saying Arizona State's running back name, Cam Scataboo.
That is kind of cool.
That is the best name in college football right
now,
hands down.
Sounds like a name you would have heard for, like, Wisconsin back in the 50s.
Yep. There's Cam Scataboo. Yep. Halfback dive up the middle, gain of 4 on the play.
42 rushing yards. Season leader.
Yeah, that would be the way it is back then. It's kind of the way it is back still now in the Big Ten. I think Arizona State's got a great opportunity at winning this game. And like you said, what a story that is to be a team that's picked to finish last in your conference. And now you're sitting here with a chance to not only win the conference, but to get into the college football playoff as well. So I'm riding that Arizona State story just because, man, it would be nice to have, because we really don't have a Cinderella. Because I don't even think we could say Boise State's a Cinderella story.
No, they've been up there the whole time.
Yeah.
Arizona State is absolutely a phenomenal story. We knew when we expanded this playoff and wanted Group of Five representation, Boise State was going to be a name that was going to be in that conversation. Arizona State was 3-9 last year. This is their first year in the Big 12, and they started out decent, but man, they really fell hard for a couple weeks there. And now all of a sudden, they're back, and I think they should be the front runner to represent the Big 12 in the bracket.
I agree with you completely. And if they win on Saturday, they will definitely do that. Most predictions have them. They won't get the bye, so they won't get that top four spots, but they'll definitely still get in. How about the ACC championship game, SMU at Clemson? We'll start off with this. If Clemson wins, are they in? I know technically they're the conference champion, so you get the conference champion push, but do they – I guess more of my question is, do they deserve to be in?
If you win your conference, sure.
Okay.
Well, because that's what – first of all, that's what the conference title game bids are for.
Right.
But also, we're talking about quality losses here.
Yeah.
If Alabama's going to get in with a 21-point loss
to Oklahoma,
to 6-6 Oklahoma,
yeah,
I don't care that Clemson got beat up by a top-10 Georgia in the first week. Not only that, but we always hear about how South Carolina is one of the toughest teams right now. Well, Clemson took them to a field goal game.
Yeah.
So – right now, Clemson's looking pretty tough based on what some people are saying. If they beat a top-10 SMU, sure, slap them in.
On the other side of that coin, you do have people saying that Clemson should not even be in the conference championship. They're only there because Miami screwed up and lost to Syracuse. So
I mean, yeah.
I think that's the flip side of that coin. I think that's why there's a lot of people looking at Clemson right now and going, but do they really belong there? Because a lot of people are looking at it more so as this should have been a Miami-SMU matchup. And they're absolutely correct. It should have been. But at the end of the day, Miami pulled an Amber Heard, and Clemson's in now.
Well, honestly, I got my Wake Forest hoodie on here.
I see that.
I'll say this, and I hope I don't offend any Miami fans when I say it.
I'm trying to figure out how he's keeping that hat on his head.
Yeah, I know. It's kind of
tilted. It's like on the side, yeah.
But the thing is, Miami reminds me a lot of the Wake Forest team we saw a few years ago that won like 11 games and went to the ACC title game.
Right, okay.
Their offense was phenomenal. Their defense couldn't stop a breeze. And that is what cost – and they also benefited from a weak schedule. That is what costed Miami. You played a 9-3 Syracuse who's decent but not great.
Right.
And you give up 42 points. That Wake Forest team also had a problem with blowing leads. Miami blew a lead. This is 2021 Wake Forest. If you don't want them in the playoffs, you shouldn't want this year's Miami.
That is a fantastic point. And by the way, to your point talking about Miami's defense, did you see what Cam Ward said?
Yes, I did.
That he said, tell the committee they need to watch the tape because we're playing defense better than anybody in the SEC. Cam, I don't know what you're smoking, but
said,
I hope you have a card for it.
Well, I thought he said
I don't.
I thought he said defenses, like plural. Like we are playing defenses that are tougher than the SEC.
Quote I saw said defense, so I don't know. It might have
been
a misquote.
Either way, he got heat for it.
Yeah, that is.
And rightfully so.
Oof.
I mean, what was their best win coming into that rivalry game?
Florida.
With Syracuse. I think Florida on paper, but you got to consider that was Graham Mertz, Florida, and that was the season opener.
True.
I think your best win was over Duke. I think you were at home. Duke's a week 9-3. Not only that, but you were down to Duke by double digits in the third quarter. Miami was fake. Let's just call it what it was. At least Clemson has proven they can linger around and compete with ranked teams. Miami hasn't proven that. Unless we're counting Syracuse, you competed with them.
That is a very fair point. Let's talk about the SEC championship game. Texas, Georgia, it's the rematch of that game in Austin earlier this year. Texas has got to run the ball better. They had, 29 yards rushing in that game against Georgia earlier in the year. They have got to run the football better. Quinn Ewers still nursing a sprained ankle. I said it Wednesday on Tomahawk Talk when I was talking to John, who was filling in for Terry Gross. I said, watch out for this game. Arch Manning is going to be a bigger factor in this game than a lot of people are expecting.
Yeah, he absolutely can be. And they've been, and you can tell they've been prepping him for moments that. Had a good touchdown against A&M just last week. I think he's definitely prepared for this game. I'm still taking Georgia to win it, though. Texas has the spread, but Texas was out of their element against Georgia the first time. Not only that, but while Texas is looking better against A&M, that was a rivalry game, and they're kind of little brother. And you got to consider that is the best you've looked in SEC play all year. You are on a stage now that is not only in Georgia's home state, but it's also a stage they are far more familiar with. I'm just not confident that Texas is going to be able to flip the script on all of that and win this game this time around.
And no Bevo for Texas, by the way.
I heard about that.
They said no to Bevo.
Can't be Goran Uga.
I think they just don't want to shovel up after what he leaves behind. I think that's
that too.
I am actually going to lean towards Texas in this game because of the Arch Manning factor. Because, like I said, Texas needs to run the football better in this game, and I think that's where Arch Manning can come into play because he's deceptive with his legs.
This is going to be his Tua game, huh?
It might be. I think this is going to be an opportunity for him to use his legs and kind of catch Georgia off guard a little bit, and I think that might be something that they can use early on. Obviously, late in the game, you're not going to be able to use it because if there's anybody in college football that's as good as making adjustments, it's going to be Kirby Smart. He's going to adjust to that. He's going to make in-game adjustments, especially at halftime. So that'll get shut down eventually. But early on, I definitely could see them using Arch Manning's legs because we were talking about it on Tomahawk Talk. You know, he's kind of a mix. Everybody wants to talk about Peyton and Eli when it comes to the Mannings. And, oh, they throw the ball, but they're not running the ball. That's for sure.
Right.
They forget about how good Archie was running the football back in his day.
Yeah, just skipped a generation.
Right. So Arch has a little bit of that into him now, so I think that they can use him. I think that'll be the difference. I like Texas in this game. I think Texas gets the revenge, and of course that'll set us up for a potential third matchup in the quarterfinals in the college football playoffs. So we'll do it all over again in a few weeks. Let's take our final time out of the show. When we come back, we'll wrap things up with your headline roundup right here on the Glass Half Full.
You want it? You got it. College football on ESPN Pensacola.
Green 18.
Today, it's the American Athletic Conference Championship game with 9-3 Tulane taking on 10-1 Army at 6 p.m. Tulane was upset by Memphis on Thanksgiving night. Can they come back and beat Army? Catch every pass, every play right here where the champions play. ESPN Pensacola.
Paul Feinbaum. On weekday afternoons after the Rich Eisen Show, 2 to 6 on ESPN Pensacola, 1330 AM, 99.1 FM.
It's the Glass Half Full with Jordan Glass. Be a part of today's show at 850-623-1330. Now, here's Jordan Glass.
Welcome back in on this Football Friday. Getting you ready for conference championship weekend here in college football. Hard to believe we are already there. Seems like we just kicked the season off yesterday, but it's already time to crown our conference champions and set up our college football playoffs and our bowl games as well. And as a matter of fact, a programming note, coming up on Monday's Glass Half Full, we are actually going to be having a very special guest with us, none other than Mr. Nick, I'm going to try to say his last name correctly, Nick Carparelli, there we go. I'm gonna have to practice it over the weekend. But Nick Carparelli from the Bowl Selection Committee will be joining us right here on the Glass Half Full at 9 a.m. We'll be talking about some of the bowl matchups. Obviously, we'll get those on Sunday, so we'll be able to talk about them on Monday, break it down, obviously, where Florida's going to be at, where LSU's going to be at, SEC teams all over different bowl games, and even into the college football playoff. We'll talk about it with him coming up on Monday's show. Coming up after us in just a couple of minutes here at 10 o'clock, we got Roll Tide Radio, and later on tonight right here on the ESPN Radio, Westwood One's coverage, or excuse me, no, ESPN Radio coverage of the, I was looking at the wrong one, of the AAC Championship game, excuse me, between Tulane and Army. I almost said Auburn. Sorry, Auburn. I'm not demoting you out of the SEC yet. I'm kidding. It's time for your headline roundup where we wrap up the show by taking a look at all the top headlines in the world of sports. We started off, obviously, last night's Thursday night football game. Jake Bates hits a field goal at the end of regulation to get the Lions a 34-31 win there. Not only does it kind of really much put a stranglehold on the NFC North for the Lions, it clinched their playoff spot, so they are in the playoffs. Just going to be, do they hold on to that number one seed? Or does Philly actually challenge them for it over the last couple of weeks of the season? We'll have to find out. Bill Belichick, as we've mentioned a couple of times during the show, spoken in North Carolina about their head coaching opportunity there with their football team. I don't know how Bill Belichick would work inside college football. I really don't. Another college football coach on the move, Bronco Mendenhall, after 1 year as the head coach at New Mexico, out there coaching the Lobos. I believe, is what they're calling. I believe that's, yeah, Lobos. He looks like he is headed to Utah State. So Bronco Mendenhall leaving New Mexico to head to Utah State. Outside of football, Nikola Jokic passed Magic Johnson last night for third on the all-time triple-double list for the NBA. So a big step in his career. Yet another step in his career that's been phenomenal. The Athletics, because you can't call them the Oakland Athletics anymore. They're just the Athletics. They clear the last major hurdle for $1.75 billion Las Vegas Stadium. Meanwhile, in Tampa, nothing. So there you go, Rays fans. The A's are getting a stadium approved before you do. How does that make you feel? Let's see. Bevo not allowed at the SEC Championship game, and Chicago Blackhawks fire Luke Richardson on Thursday. After three seasons, they are the worst team in the NHL. That is going to do it for today's Glass Half Full. Have a great weekend. Roll Tide Radio coming up next.